Hi, everyone. The Business Ethics Leadership Alliance has questions, and we have answers. I'm your host, Bill Coffin. Welcome to another Bella Asks episode of the Ethicast. One of the best benefits of being a member of the Business Ethics Leadership Alliance, or Bella, is that if you have any questions at all about ethics and compliance, you can submit them to Bella's concierge service, which will connect you with one of our internal experts who will provide an answer and or direct you to a helpful resource for more information. Sometimes these requests are specific to a particular company's needs, but most of them speak to broad challenges facing Bella members in general, and by extension, the wider ethics and compliance profession. That's why we're using this show to thematically respond to high-level questions from the Bella community. And joining us once again to answer those questions is Bella Chair Erica Salmon Byrne. Erica, thank you so much for coming back to the show. It's great to see you.
Absolutely, Bill. Happy to be back. And the fact that I am means that we keep getting these questions. So that makes me even more happy to be here.
We have another compliance question for you. It's a pretty fundamental one. It reads, what does a good compliance reporting structure look like?
Bill, this is a very interesting question because what the person asking the question did not specify is, are they asking about compliance lead down reporting structure? Like who should be on my team? What roles do they have? What responsibilities do they have? Or are they asking about reporting lead compliance person up, which is a different question. Like, do I report into the CEO? Do I report into the administrative officer? Do I report into the chief operating officer or the general counsel? What does my reporting relationship look like with the board, right? Those are different questions to be asking when it's time to think about your reporting structure. So I'm going to give a little bit of insight into both directions. And then for anybody listening in who is curious about either one of these pieces and would like to go into more detail, we have a lot of data in the sphere about what, you know, FTE levels look like, what backgrounds on teams look like, what budget levels look like, and then also what reporting lines up look like in terms of where the compliance function sits inside the organization. So what our data tells us, I'm going to start with compliance officer or chief compliance officer down. What our data tells us is we are seeing an increased diversity of backgrounds on the team. We are seeing more companies with communications professionals that are part of the compliance team and responsible for drafting compelling communications that employees actually want to engage with. We are seeing more companies put people with data backgrounds on the team, and those people are responsible for data analytics and, you know, looking at different dashboarding and different ways that data can tell an organization how the program is performing. We are seeing more teams with auditors on them or forensic accountants, particularly if you are in an industry where you might have to do a lot of forensic work as part of an investigation. People with investigations backgrounds, real broad, you know, lawyers, of course, continue to be very prevalent on teams. Really, really broad backgrounds on compliance teams across the organization. And more often than not, we will see teams that have people who are specializing in particular pieces of the program. So you would have somebody who works on your third-party risk management. You would have somebody who is really focused on training, somebody who is thinking about communications and manager preparedness, things along those lines. So increasing specialization on teams from a background perspective and increasing specialization on roles. But of course, also we're seeing a lot of people who are compliance managers and other kind of generalist roles as well. On the time-tested age-old question of where do I sit inside the organization, again, a fair amount of diversity. We do still see a majority of programs, a majority of functions rolling into legal, where the person who is running the program, the chief compliance officer, is increasingly not dual-hatted. So while we do still see some compliance officers who are also the general counsel, increasingly we are seeing a recognition on the part of companies that those are two different full-time jobs, and you should designate the person who's actually running the program accordingly and give them the appropriate level of gravitas in the organizational chart. And so we are seeing a separation of those two hats off of one person, but we do still see a lot of programs rolling into the legal department where the person who's running compliance is reporting to the general counsel. We also see, and this is being driven by regulatory expectations, a lot of programs where the person who is running the program also has a direct line in to the board, the relevant chair of the relevant committee that oversees the program, and that they are having their own direct conversations with that individual that do not go through the general counsel. Very importantly, you know, they have direct access to the board, which is a pretty clear regulatory expectation. The one place I will caveat that we see a different structure is if you are subject to the oversight of Health and Human Services here in the US. That entity has been very clear that they believe that reporting into the legal department is bogus. They don't want to see it. They want to see compliance as its own independent function. And I believe that is driving the fact that in about 40% of the data set at this point, we do see compliance reporting outside of legal and either directly to the CEO from a managerial perspective or to somebody else in the C-suite, whether that be a chief operating officer or chief administrative officer, something along those lines. And then, of course, that critically important direct unfettered line into the chair of the board committee.
Erica, what don't you want to see on a compliance reporting org chart?
You don't want to see four levels between you and anybody who is ultimately responsible for the behavior of the organization. The farther down you are in the org chart, the less likely your information is getting to the people it needs to get to. So you don't want to see a board reporting line, for example, where there's a number of stops along the way where your information can get watered down and you don't have direct access to the chair. If you have that structure, I can guarantee you that if you wind up in front of any regulatory body, they are going to look quite askance at that because, you know, again, even going back, Bill, to the 2010 amendments to the sentencing guidelines, part of the reason we saw those amendments is because in 2010, we saw the federal sentencing guidelines get amended to really talk about that unfettered access to the board. And the primary reason for that was the GC was actually involved in the misconduct at issue. And the board had no idea because the general counsel kept anybody on the compliance team that was trying to get that information to the board from getting that information to the board. And so since 2010, we have really been seeing a very clear expectation from the regulators that the people who are responsible for compliance on a day-to-day basis need to have unfettered access to the board or to the chair of the committee that oversees the program, where nobody else is filtering out the information they're providing. There's no approval of their board materials. They are able to sit in executive session with that committee. They're able to talk on a regular basis to the chair. That is the clear regulatory expectation and has been for the course of the last 14 years.
Well, Erica, thank you once again for coming on the show and for answering these questions. I know we all learn something really valuable every time you join us on another Bella Asks episode. So thanks again.
Bill, it is my pleasure. And if anybody out there listening, you know, has any other questions, I do hope you'll send them in because as long as you keep asking questions, I get to come back and talk to Bill and give you all some answers.
To learn more about Bella, please visit bella.ethisphere.com to request guest access to the Bella Member Resource Hub and to speak with the Bella Engagement Director. And if you have a question that you'd like answered, be sure to use the Bella Concierge service and we'll get to your question just as soon as we can. I'm Bill Coffin, and this has been a special Bella Asks episode of the Ethicast. For more episodes, please visit the Ethisphere YouTube channel at youtube.com/ethisphere. And if this is your first time enjoying the show, please make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, remember, strong ethics is good business.